we'll be dealing a little bit with the some of the presentations on collection of different recyclables. I'm going to call on groups of three. Dan Floyd, if you'll come forward, with Larry Hagee and Ron Brake. That a good threesome to start with? That's the order I have.
Okay.
Okay. Pull up a second, a fourth chair, if you will.
I messed with your lineup a little bit. I apologize.
Not a problem.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Dan Floyd, represent the 235 members and 1,100 member locations of the Oregon Grocery Association. Our association members are involved in manufacturing, distributing, and retailing of grocery products. They also employ over 50,000 Oregonians. Today I'm here to discuss Oregon's Beverage Container Act of 1971, also known as the Bottle Bill. We feel since 1971, OGA members have been unfairly burdened by the Bottle Bill. We have a number of retailers here today who are going to discuss go into more depth as to why they have been burdened by the Bottle Bill. Since we have such a great lineup for you, I'm just going to briefly hit on the 4 points that they're going to talk about. They will be talking about how unsanitary the cans and bottles are that come back to the store, the overall cost to these retailers, the amount of cans they over-redeem, and also the limited space they have within their stores. And so with that, I will turn it over, but I want to just give you a heads up on this lineup. We have Larry Hague from C&K Markets, Ron Brake, who's to my right. He's from Food for Less, operates stores in Portland and Gresham. Mary Lofton is from Fred Meyer. I believe she has a store in all of your districts. Bob Fleur is from Hagen's. Jim Welsh is from, Mill City Marketplace. I'm sorry, Manzanita Fresh Foods. He came all the way from the coast today to talk to you about the Bottle Bill. Jim Jerome, he came from Mill City Marketplace. Got that one right. Bridget Flanagan, she's from Safeway. I believe she has a store in all of your districts as well. And Jim Bruneau, he's different out of this group. He's the owner of Willamette Valley Vineyards, and he will give you a perspective from the winery's point of view. And then finally, our president, Joe Gilliam, will conclude. And I'll turn that over to our members. Thank you.
Give your name.
I forgot one. Robin Thomas
yeah.
From Bales Thriftway. They operate two stores, both right outside of Portland, I believe Farmington Road and Cedar Hills.
Thank you, Dan.
Members of the committee, my name is Ron Brake. I'm the owner of two Food for Less stores, one in Portland and one in Gresham, Oregon. And I'm not in favor of expansion of the Bottle Bill, at least as it sits today. We have Dan talked about the issues, and really those are the key issues. We've pegged the number at right around $70,000 per store per year that it costs us to manage the process of dealing with the Bottle Bill. And that really begins with the cost of the reverse vending machines, and then it goes into obviously the labor that's involved in dealing with all of the cans and bottles, and then the space and the challenges that we have in the back rooms of our stores that were really never built to deal with the amount of these big square containers that we all have in our back rooms. That take up an enormous amount of space. Sanitation, not hard to figure out about the sanitation issues. We're really the only industry, probably short of maybe people that sell batteries, that their waste actually or refuse comes back into the stores. And we have all discovered the challenges over the years of dealing with that, and they're immense. It's amazing. Even this isn't meant to make light of it, but even Goodwill makes you wash clothes before you bring them into their stores. And so we're really dealing with, in many cases, cans and bottles that are, in many cases, thrown in the garage or in the back backyard and then picked up over some period of time and brought into the stores. And so, as you can imagine, every form of creature and element comes in with the cans and bottles when they come in. And I can tell you, we keep very, very clean stores, and we find this to be an enormous challenge. So the cost, the issue about dealing with the sanitation, the amount of space it takes, those are really the key elements as to why this is such a challenge.
Thank you. Ron, is that a $70,000 net loss, or is that the loss superseded by the monies you take in?
That's after everything is done, it's a net loss, Representative Anderson.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hey, Robin.
Yes, I'm Robin Thomas. I'm with the Bales Thriftway stores in Portland and Aloha. We have about 300 employees in our two stores. And like Ron, I brought some information along. I'd be happy to share with the committee on the exact cost. This last year, I took a sample of one of our stores, and I'd like to just share that because I think, Chairman, your question was pretty appropriate. In 1971, when we started the bottle bill, which I think we're all supportive of in the recycling and the rest, we used employees to do that at an expense. Over the years, all of us have gone to machines to take care of that. For us, we have three machines per store, and those machines cost us $16,000 to $18,000 per machine just for the cost of that. Some stores lease those. We have bought those. So we have an exposure there in equipment that will last us 5 to 6 years, depending on service, of about $50,000. Maintenance on those equipment, on that equipment, run about $2,200 to $2,500 a year just to keep them functional. The cleaning, emptying, maintaining, receiving, we figure it costs us about 3 hours a day. 364 days, the only day it doesn't work is Christmas when we close the doors, the only day of the year. So that's a cost of about $25,000 a year in that respect. So those are our exposures as far as equipment. It's about $25,000 a year in maintenance and cleanup, taking care of the sanitation, which is a really huge issue for us. Does not take into impact the containers that our customers use to bring in those bottles that we end up throwing in the garbage, or our compactors and send to the garbage dump on top of that. Pretty significant. The other side of that is the amount of redemption that we do. I'll give you three numbers. The first number being the amount of product that we sell to our customers on an annualized basis in our one store accounts for about $85,000 in deposits. We get back from customers bringing those recycled bottles back about $122,000 a year. So we are taking back about 35% more than what we are selling. We are a community market. We take all kinds of bottles and returns back from people. So we have an excess of over $36,000 a year in those, which is a direct expense to us. On top of that, when we send that crushed glass and compacted can containers back to Crink in that process, we sent back last year just short of $118,000. And again, received about $122,000. So, excuse me, we sent back about $122,000. We got back from Crink about $117,000. So there was just short of a $4,000 shortfall in that transaction. So overall, each year it's costing us, as Ron has said, $60,000 to $70,000 in doing this. On top of all the sanitation, in our particular stores, some of the stores have the can machines and the recycling out in front. Ours is in the back of the store, so the customers walk through the store with that. Regardless, all that product comes across our floors into the back, so the sanitation is a real constant issue for us. Our seafood case smells, we get right after it. So you can imagine what happens with the can recycling for us. So appreciate it. I'll leave this information for you to look at. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, could I have Mary Laughlin, and Bob Fleur, James Welsh.
Good afternoon. Chair Anderson and members of the committee, I am Mary Lofton, Vice President of Public Affairs for Fred Meyer Stores, which is headquartered in Southeast Portland. We have 50 stores in 20 counties around the state, and we employ nearly 14,000 employees. Fred Meyer is one of the largest employers in the state of Oregon, and we do not support the expansion of the bottle bill at retail stores. We are a retailer, not a recycling center. Yet over the years, grocery stores such as Fred Meyer and my fellow members of the Oregon Grocers Association have become the bottle and can recycling destination around the state. Fred Meyer has reverse vending machines that was previously mentioned in all 50 of our stores in Oregon. The cost for the facilities, the machines, supplies, and labor is extremely expensive, which the retailers do absorb without compensation. Currently, we have 221 reverse vending machines in stores in Oregon. The number of machines per store does vary by the volume of redemptions done at that particular location. For example, the Hollywood West store in Portland has the highest volume of redemptions at 10,877,432 cans per year. In 2004, Fred Meyer took in a total of 283,446,952 containers in the state of Oregon. In order to handle the volume of cans that pass through Fred Meyer, as I mentioned earlier, we do have this 221 redemption machines, these reverse vending machines, which have a value of $3,628,000. In addition, we have to replace, on average, 45 machines per year, and that brings an additional cost of just shy of $900,000 to us. Supplies for the reverse vending machines also add up. There's 4x4 totes that the crushed glass is placed into at just over $100,000, plastic bags at just over $150,000, large and small receipt tape of just short of $20,000, and then there's three major costs, which I haven't even mentioned yet, and that is the land, the building costs, and the operational labor. The land occupied by the bottle return centers at Fred Meyer is valued at $1.5 million. The bottle return centers at Fred Meyer are designed specifically for each site. We do have one store that currently does the bottle returns inside the store. We have 31 lean-to styles. This is where the machines are attached to the outside of the building, which is a small lean-to covering them because of the weather. We have 18 off-site buildings. Three are actually attached to the building, 15 that are freestanding. With this, keep in mind that, as was previously mentioned, sanitation is a major issue with bottle returns at the grocery store where fresh food is being sold. This is a major reason for the different styles of bottle return areas and where we can, move them to an off-site freestanding building. When our one store remaining with an inside redemption center is remodeled, we will move that facility outside, again, due to sanitation issues. The freestanding bottle return centers are an average of 2,000 square feet, with a total project cost per center, including equipment, of $236,000. The lean-tos can be as much as $150,000. We also have to utilize additional space in stockrooms, trailers, and the back rooms of our warehouses and of the freestanding bottle centers to hold the cans after redemption has taken place. In order to maintain these vending machines and keep the area clean, we have to incur labor costs of $728,000. All told, these costs connect with operating the bottle return centers under the current bill for Fred Meyer come to over $15 million. Retailers have assisted in the execution of the 1971 bottle bill without compensation, as I mentioned earlier. I would like to leave you with one other thought. The bottle return areas can be a very precarious place. Although our employees are extremely well trained, situations happen that put our employees and our customers at risk. In the past, we have had a customer become critically ill from anaphylactic shock after being stung by a bee on a hot summer's day while doing her bottle redemption. And I'm sure you've all been there when you're being swarmed by bees with that hot, sticky syrup because people haven't washed out their cans before bringing them back. We have also had our employees badly cut from handling the bottles and cans. They had to go through a series of tests and shots due to the potential exposure to blood-borne pathogens. This exposure is above and beyond the job description of someone in retail. So as you hear the remainder of the testimony, please remember that we are retailers. We are not recyclers. It is not the mission of grocery industry to be a destination retailer in the state. We do support the spirit of the 1971 bottle bill, but again, not the expansion of the bottle bill at retail locations. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Just to clarify the record.
Representative Jensen.
There's a county in which there are no Fred Meyer stores, I think, that the representative comes from. So just to make sure that the record was clear.
Were you lobbying? Or?
Well, they can take it however they, you know.
Go where you want one. I'll help you get a bill.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Senator Lynch.
Yes. Thank you very much for the testimony. And it seems to me $15 million means about $30,000 per store a year.
Mm-hmm.
If my math calculation is correct. Since you are losing that much money, how could we help you to make it better?
Well, that is why we're all here today. One of the things that we are proposing is with OGA, and I believe you have the sheet in front of you that is the OGA explanation sheet, we would like to look at both the amount of the redemption and a fee for us to handle that. If not, what we'd really love to see is to have the bottle redemption leave our sites and to be at an external redemption center in the city. Again, we are not retailers, or we are not recyclers, excuse me, we're retailers. And best case scenario for Fred Meyer would be to be out of the recycling business. Again, we support the 1971 bill, but we really need to focus on our key business, which is selling groceries in a safe and sanitary place. And that would not be having that recycling center on our property. We've been more than willing, by looking at the numbers that we've been spending on our own without compensation, but it is time for a change.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair. Concerning the compensation, what is the proper amount of compensation? Just 1 cent, 2 cents, or 5 cents, whatever?
I am actually going to defer that to Joe Gilliam, who is going to be the one bringing up the end of all of our testimony, because he can speak to that much better than I.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
You mentioned that you'd prefer to go to some off-site location. Have you made any overtures to organizations that might be host to this kind of activity?
Fred Meyer has not, but the ideas are definitely on the floor with OGA and with our members about how this can be done with a private party to run those redemption centers, which would, of course, create jobs and have more people in our community working.
A follow-up, if I may.
Hello.
Thank you. And maybe I should wait until Mr. Gilliam is up, if he's going to talk about that, too. But the follow-up question I'd have is, since several of you have said, and you yourself have said, that you support the original bill and its objectives, what kind of impact on those objectives would such an arrangement have, specifically with relation to the removal of the keeping the containers out of highways and byways,
right,
keeping them out of the waste stream? If there are other ways that you've explored that achieve those objectives, I'd really be interested in hearing them.
Well, and that is much of what Mr. Gilliam is going to speak on, and I don't want to take his words.
Yes. Fine, I'll wait for him. Thanks.
Can I have one more question?
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Senator?
And according to the testimony given to us by Robin from the Food for Less, I guess, and he claimed he is sending $122,000 worth of bottles and cans, but its return is $117,000, which means $4,000 short. I'm wondering, do you experience the same thing that while you are sending it and getting less?
We do experience the same thing. Unfortunately, when I requested those numbers from our operations department, they were unable to provide them for me in time for this hearing. I would be happy to provide our numbers to you tomorrow. I could send them out to your team via email. But there is a definite loss that we incur also for that redemption.
Thank you. And if you'll refer those to
I'd be happy
staff.
To.
Let me ask a question. Was Fred Meyer or Kroger, I assume, mm-hmm. go over state lines to Washington, California?
We are in, Oregon is in four states. We are in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. Mm-hmm. Kroger's in 23 states mm-hmm. across the country. There is issue, as was mentioned earlier, with people bringing those bottles and cans across state line. I think we've all seen people hauling them in the back of their pickup trucks as they cross various bridges into Portland, and you know exactly what they're doing. They bring them right into the parking lots of any major grocer that is on the freeway system where they could have easy access in order to redeem, and that is much where the loss is coming from also. Another area that we experience that loss is because people are going to warehouse stores such as Costco, where they're buying case pack quantity of pop, but they are not necessarily redeeming an equal amount, and so there is definite inequity about who's taking how many bottles back. At our Hollywood West store, with over 10 million bottles redeemed, we are of course on the I-84 corridor, and there is a transient problem in that area, and you can stand there and watch, and we can't account number by number, but a large portion of that is from the transients that are going around picking those cans. We have no idea where they purchased them from. Most likely not, well, they didn't purchase them, but the person who then purchased and dumped most likely didn't purchase it at Fred Meyer, and then we're taking back that can and being out the nickel.
You brought up an issue, and I want to get back to the original question, and that is to do you, for instance, if a company sells cans, do they have to take cans back as well?
The current,
like Costco or?
If it is private label, for example, we carry Big K. So we need to take Big K pop back, but Safeway does not, right. And vice versa. Right. But if it is a major brand, yes, we do take it back.
And does Costco?
They take back their brand and major brands. But if you look at a Hollywood West where we have a multitude of machines in order to handle the volume, if you go to, say, a Costco, they don't have a representation of enough reverse vending machines to handle the volume of which they're actually selling. So they are not a destination recycling place like Fred Meyer, Safeway, Albertsons, Food for Less.
Would you be in favor of an encouragement to make them be proportional to what they sell?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now let me get back to the question I was kind of pointing toward before, and that is that other states have recycling programs. California, mm-hmm. for instance, has a recycling. Kroger would be the entity here, not
with our Ralph's stores in California.
Can you comment at all on how the program there works in relationship to what you're doing here?
I actually do not know their program very well.
Okay.
So I would not feel confident.
Others may. Yeah. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Fleur, and I work for Hagen Food Stores, the district manager in Portland. We have four stores in Portland. We have 28 stores in the state of Washington, and we are about to open another store in Beaverton. I'd like to address four major issues with the proposed bottle bill. Would be opposed to any changes in our current format. I think the current bottle bill, the intent of that was very, very good. However, it really places a large burden on all the retailers. Every company has a little different way of figuring it, but we figure in Portland it's costing us about $20,000 per store per year on employee costs alone. Then we have, on our first store in Oregon, we went out and purchased the machines. After 4 or 5 years, we found the machines were obsolete. So now we currently rent the machines in all stores, and we plan on renting those also in our new store. We have receipt tape, cleaning supplies, bags to put the returnables in, so we have energy, a lot of different associated expenses with that, not only the employee cost. the first three stores we opened, we had the recyclable center right in front of the store. And we have decided that it really kind of discourages some people from coming in the door, especially in the months of July, August, September, when you have extreme heat outside. So we have chosen, as a company, to put the recycle centers out in the parking lot. This cost, our latest store that we'll open in Beaverton in the spring of 05, it's going to cost about a little over $50,000 to put that center out in the parking lot, because we've got to have a drain in there so we can wash that down every night because of the things that would accumulate in your returnable center, and that drain has to be tied back into the store. So there are a lot of cost factors concerned, a lot of public health factors concerned. If we would expand this at all, we would need to change a lot the format on the outside, the front of our old existing stores, and we'd have to build much larger buildings, which would obviously cost us a lot more to take any increase in recyclables. So for those reasons, we would really be opposed to that. Thank you very much for listening to my testimony today.
Thank you again. Would you tell me any stores you represent?
Hagen.
Hagen. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Bolden.
Thank you. Just so that I can get a sense, I'm not an expert in grocery retail business. How much do you spend per store in an average year on other waste disposal? Getting rid of your garbage?
Mr. Chairman, Mrs. Nolan, I don't know. I don't have those facts with me. I can get those and provide those to you tomorrow. We do have meat, all kinds of sanitation things picked up from our store, but don't have a number, not an accurate number that I could give you today.
A quick follow-up. And I'm sorry, what I'm trying to do is get a sense of the proportion of your estimated cost on handling recycled containers with other kinds of typical expenses. And it would be helpful if you could get your estimate for waste disposal and perhaps maybe an average per store on what you spend on marketing, just so that I can put it in some kind of perspective. Thank you.
I will provide that.
Thank you. Good evening, members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. My name is Jim Welch, and I'm the owner of Manzanita Fresh Foods. We're a grocery store in the resort town of Manzanita. I've owned the store since 1997, and over the past 7 or 8 years, our business has increased, and so has obviously our bottle and container redemption. And being located in a resort town, we've got some unique problems that we have summer, which we triple our volume. So we have a period of time where we have really serious problems with storage of the containers. And that's where we're concerned about adding to the bottle redemption bill, especially with bottled water or wine bottles. And in the summer, we sort on the average every day about 50 cases to 60 cases a day. That's about 1,000 cans and bottles. It takes a lot of time. And many of these containers are not Oregon redemption value containers. We have a lot of visitors from Washington. When they come to visit, they bring product with them. And when they leave, the last thing they really want to take with them is their bottles and things, so they redeem them in our grocery store. And we end up, I think, probably redeeming 120% of our actual container sales. And there's been several problems that have become rather severe for us. And our numbers may not be as big as the larger stores that you've heard about already, but they're proportional. First, you know, the sanitation problem is a problem for us, just like everyone. Anybody that's sorted them in the hot summer can testify to that. And if any of you haven't had that unique experience, I'll be glad to let you get your hands wet, so to speak, and we'll even pay you to do it. flies and bees and cigarette butts and other unmentionables are routinely found in the containers. And broken glass shards are routine causes of workers' compensation injuries. And it is a strange conundrum that the clerk who sells you your dinner is also the required by law to sort your garbage. And it's as much as you try your best to keep everything sanitary, there's just some things that splash, stale beer splashes on the clerks, their clothes or their uniforms become soiled with contaminated matter, and it's very unpleasant. The redemption process is expensive for us. Our costs yearly are approximately $5,000 a year, and it's, granted, it's not $20,000 or $30,000 like some of these stores, but it's a significant expense. Last year, we had to buy an extra storage shed. That was about $1,500, and that's barely adequate for our needs right now. And if more products were added to the list, we'd probably have to buy another container shed. We've looked at machines, but we're not quite there. However, if, again, more products were added to the bottle bill, we'd probably have to go there. And that's, as I mentioned, it's $16,000 to $18,000 that we'd have to come up, or another $500 a month on a lease. I don't think the legislature really wants to impose that burden on small businesses in the state. It's not really a productive way of reinvigorating our economy. The last item is I've mentioned it, the storage situation. And one of the things that you might wish to think about is that for every container that's mandated to be mandated to have a redemption value, there's got to be a corresponding space in the back room for that container when it's returned to the store. Not only is there a space when it's sold or on the shelf, but when customers bring the products back, there's got to be a place in our back rooms to store them, and that's the storage problem. So I think that I would ask the legislature really give serious thought to the problems that we've outlined here today. Thank you.
Questions?
Representative Jensen.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. You represent pretty much the large and the small. Are there any general classifications or any types of retailers that sell more than they recycle, or vice versa?
Well, in my case, I'm the one of two stores in our town. I'm the larger of the two, and we have gas stations that have mini marts, but they really don't take much back. Again, like lady from Fred Meyer's mentioned, Costco's, they have one machine. We have a Costco in Warrenton. They have one machine at their store, and so we take a lot of bottles back. We just are a kind of a redemption center. We're local, and I think many of the larger supermarkets here are in that same situation. They're the local guy. That's where the customers shop.
Mm-hmm. Chairman, if I may also add to that, in addition to the Costco's of the world, Walmart is also a retailer that does sell quite a bit of soda pop. And then, again, people bring it back to other retailers. They will often go to a Walmart for a lost leader price item in their ad, buy their soda pop, go back to their town, and then redeem them in their hometown. Another place where people can buy soda pop and beer that you don't see redemption is at convenience stores. And so people really don't think about it, but yes, you could redeem your bottles and cans. Due to the bill in 1971, it states that you can. Although, how many of us actually think about taking our bottles and cans to 7-Eleven? It is not top of mind, where those of us in the room really are top of mind, and that's why we have become the destination retailers and recyclers.
And yet, Mr. Chair, for those of us who remember the original bill, it was Plaid Pantry who helped make it mm-hmm. pass.
Mm-hmm. And Fred Meyer.
And Fred Meyer, yes.
But.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I may, we took in 2004 about 30% more recyclables than we sold like products. And what we are noticing is the redemption centers that are away from the store, in other words, that are out more convenient for the consumer out on the highways, are taking in an ever larger amount of recyclables. You can think of all the people that would use beer or soda water as lost leaders for people to come in their stores that may not be a grocery store or a Walmart or a Costco, but a lot of other entities in the marketplace do that. And then they would bring them back, and I assume that's part of our 30%.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Larry, I'm sorry we've kind of overlooked you there. Why don't you come on up along with Jim Giroux and Bridget Flanagan.
I want to sit in the middle.
Larry, why don't you start out?
My name is Larry Haig. I'm with C&K Market. We're an independent grocer located based out of Brookings, Oregon. We have 31 grocery stores in Oregon and 20 in California. So we get a taste of both sides of the recycling issue. A lot of the issues have been covered. Rather than taking up you folks' time today in redundancy, I'll just hit on a couple of issues. I certainly fall in line with a lot of what's been discussed today. Our plight is consistent across the board in our industry. One of the issues that wasn't brought up is use of our grocery carts as a vehicle for transporting recyclables. Those same recyclables that have... we don't need to go into detail. Your imagination serves you, I'm sure you know. And besides being drugged through the store, but those are the same grocery carts that, you know, we're mandated to maintain at certainly a healthful level. And we have regular cycles of cleaning, but managing it day to day, hour to hour is nearly impossible to do. So at one point to bring to your attention. Grocers are responsible for the storage of the products in their back rooms. Once again, it talks to the odors and residues from the crushed cans. I think the gentleman from Manzanita spoke well that a lot of the folks you're talking to are larger, are larger corporations, and not all of our stores, majority of our stores do have the can units, but there are a lot of independent grocers who are trying to stay alive. I mean, these are single family owned businesses, and they plainly simply don't have the capital to go out and make those capital expenditures for the systems that have been talked about, or they have the volume. The one thing we do operate is in small communities, and therefore we end up taking on those products with all the waste that's in them and encounter those in our store. In the case of the locations where we do have the recyclables, we've kind of become the dump site for customers' garbage. The excess that they won't go into the machine now becomes our property. And to bring up your point, Ms. Chairman, Vice Chairman, the garbage rates, it's a bit of a monopoly in communities, and it's set up that way, competitive atmosphere. So there's a lot of variance in rates. I don't know that I certainly couldn't sit down and quote you a mean average rate because it varies so widely by what local councils provide to them for a cost basis. But it certainly is an enhanced, even from the aspect of these self-service units. I think there's a perception in too many minds that this product goes in these machines and it suddenly vaporizes from the grocers. You know, it's just not their problem anymore. The glass units that have been talked about with Crink, it takes two people to manage these things, to manhandle the things, literally. They're a big bin full of crushed glass, which has no value, and the way the machines process it leaves shards of glass in far too many places, which can cause problems. Once again, in an effort not to be redundant with some of the other discussions, probably one of our other biggest issues is the recycling rate. We take in far more. A lot of our towns are in tourist areas, so you'll have people coming to town with X amount of groceries to get camps set up. While they do buy product from us, they do bring it with them. And we are in excess of, in some cases, of 200% of what we sell, especially during seasonal periods. I think if you're up and down the highways, if you look at the of how the industry is changing and it's affected customer counts in our grocery stores, the convenience aspect of adding food products to gas stations, everybody's getting in the grocery business at one point or another. The drug stores are in the grocery business. I quiver to think what the pharmaceutical folks would do if they were there was a big issue made about them recycling the volume of cans and bottles that we're forced to take on board for ourselves, for our customers. And that's part in the small communities we live in and work in. We are the local grocery store. So with that comes incumbencies. You support the Little League team. You do everything you need to do to keep your customers at home, number one, and to keep them happy. So while not fighting that, we do feel that there's a huge inequity in the responsibility that's put on our shoulders at the expense of those who get into the business and reap the benefits of the sales, but none of the responsibility for the byproducts that are created. I can speak slightly to the California issue, and they have taken everything off-site. The responsibility of the retailer is to have a center within a geographic zone of a half mile. In most communities, the larger communities, which for our purposes is a city the size of Eureka, which really isn't a very large community. We're, like, once again, we are located in what is called down south the state of Jefferson, which is predominated by the local small towns. And that works well. It works very well for us. And I don't know about the administration of it. The government, I know the government's involved in it. But it has removed all of the negative aspects out of our backyard and taken it to centers that are equipped to handle it. And it's working well, apparently, for them. I can't speak to the cost that the government is taking on. They went in far too cheap on the get-in. That much I do know. They went in at 2.5 cents, and it did not incentivize anybody. We've got a lot of stores on the border of California to Oregon. 2.5 cents brings it over the border. So what you're suffering from in Washington is consistent in our case.
It's at 3 cents now in California?
At 2.5.
Is it still 2.5?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bridget Flanagan, and I am Public Affairs Director for Safeway's Northwest Division, whose headquarters are in Clackamas, Oregon. Just a quick background. Safeway has operated stores in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest since the early 1920s. Today, we operate over 1,800 stores in the United States and Canada. Closer to home, Safeway operates 119 stores. Of those, 102 are in Oregon, and the balance, or 17, are located in Southwest Washington. Safeway, I'm also pleased to say, is Oregon's fourth largest employer. I'm here this afternoon to testify in opposition to expanding the Oregon bottle bill unless the redemption facet is removed from retail grocery stores. In the 34 years since the Oregon bottle bill was enacted, it has served as model legislation for numerous other states around the country. And this is legislation we can be proud of, but like many other laws that are over three decades old, this law is in need of a tune-up to accommodate changes in our society. And I believe changes are needed to strengthen the bottle bill to better serve Oregonians. But simply and only expanding the number of containers covered under the bottle bill is not the answer. The food industry in general, and Safeway and grocers specifically, have expended numerous resources and taken on significant financial burdens to accommodate the legal requirements of the bottle bill. Grocers have worked very hard to make the redemption of bottles and cans as easy, fast, and as efficient, an efficient part of your weekly grocery shopping trip. Within my company, I know that Safeway has worked very hard to incorporate bottle and can redemption into our service culture. And for a highly service-oriented industry like the retail grocery business, service is one of the most important commodities we can offer our customers. However, I need to mention a couple of factors that have greatly impacted grocery business in recent years. First of all, the number of beverages covered by the bottle bill has increased over the past 34 years. New products and explosion of flavored beverages, as well as different sized containers, have greatly added to the volume of deposit containers being redeemed in grocery stores. Secondly, the buying habits of consumers have changed over the past three decades. People purchase more and consume more carbonated beverages now than they did 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. With the increased number of containers being purchased and redeemed, there has also been an increased amount of filth and contamination being brought into grocery stores when the empty containers are being returned. And there are very few things that scare a grocer more than filth and garbage being brought into our stores. We can control what's going on within those four walls, but it's very difficult, if not impossible, to control what's being brought into our stores from the outside in or on those containers. And I suggest that there should be very few things that scare you, either as a shopper or as a legislator, more than dirt, germs, and contaminants being brought into the same store that handles your family's food. Safeway and all grocers are obligated to maintain cleanliness and health standards that are beyond reproach. We're clean freaks, and anyone who sells food really should be. We work around the clock to keep our stores clean, sanitary, and presentable. We have very high standards of cleanliness, and we insist that our stores operate and our employees follow all sanitation procedures. Sanitation, as it relates to container redemption, is an ongoing challenge for retailers, especially given the increased amount of garbage being brought back to stores inside these returned containers. We found all kinds of contaminants hidden inside empty containers. Things like, and forgive me for saying these things, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, but I think they need to be said. We found urine, feces, blood, spit, mice and bugs, used contraceptive devices, used feminine hygiene products, used hypodermic needles, and just plain old run-of-the-mill everyday garbage. These are items that no one wants in their food store, and items that we as food handlers should not be subjected to handling. Fourth, redeeming containers has almost become a secondary business for grocers, a business mandated by the state, and an unfunded mandate, as you've learned. Of course, we do want to continue doing our part to ensure the continued success of the bottle bill. We love it. But we really just want to continue our main business, which is selling groceries. Grocers don't want to be recyclers, and we certainly don't want to be garbage collectors either. And I'd like to share a few numbers with you, if I could, please. Last year, the 103 Oregon stores redeemed 319 million containers. That means that each week, Safeway redeemed 6.1 million containers. Last year, as comparison, Safeway sold 237 million containers, deposit containers. That means that last year, Safeway redeemed 35% more containers than we sold. And that does not include any of our competitors' cans, because as you learned earlier, we're not required by law to take back anything that we don't sell. Everyone is aware, obviously, that Oregon grocers have never received compensation for handling deposit containers, and yet grocers have had to absorb huge expenditures in order to make the bottle bill work as smoothly as it has and is. As pioneers of the bottle bill, I think it's important to mention that Oregon retailers did not have the benefit of other states before us to reveal the cost and burdens associated with container redemption. As other states have implemented their own bottle bills, they have learned from us and recognized the costs and burdens placed on retailers. As a result, many states have built in compensation for those retailers, or in some cases, removed the redemption process completely away from retailers to centrally located centers. Now we have the opportunity and obligation to address those issues, including the expenses that grocers have absorbed. These expenses include labor, equipment costs, and leasing costs, as well as construction costs for Safeway, total just under $3 million each year. In addition, over the past few years, Safeway has spent an additional $1 million in new construction costs to build redemption containers in or around our new stores. If the bottle bill were expanded to include bottled water and the new age beverages, that would have a monumental impact on Safeway and, I believe, our friends in the grocery business. To illustrate, of those products, last year Safeway sold 15 million individual containers of bottled water and new age beverages. And based on our redemption record, that would translate into more than 340 million containers being redeemed each week, each year at Safeway if those products were added. To expand the bottle bill to include more items is a commendable goal and a goal that we do support. We are, however, opposed to requiring grocery stores, your grocery store, to take in more garbage and to assume full financial responsibility for something that should be a shared responsibility. We contend that this is a program that should be managed away from the public's food. It's an interesting fact to me and to note that there are few, if any, other items our state recycles that have to be returned to where the item was purchased. For example, you don't have to take back your copy of the Oregonian or the Statesman Journal to the publisher or even to your delivery person. And you don't have to take back your used or out-of-date computer equipment back to Fry's, Office Depot, or Circuit City. So you have to ask, why do cans and bottles have to be returned to grocery stores? The answer is, they don't. These items can be recycled easier and more directly. So yes, it's time to update Oregon's bottle bill, and yes, it's time to expand the number of containers that Oregonians can redeem and recycle. And yes, it's definitely time to keep it easy and convenient for Oregonians to recycle containers. But it's not time nor appropriate to ask grocers to become the financiers of this recycling and garbage collection effort. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I urge you to consider moving the redemption aspect out of grocery and food stores. The Oregon bottle bill needs to be updated, but we need to take the time to do it correctly and make the right changes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you. Questions? Good. Thank you. Jim.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate the chance to talk today. The gentleman from Manzanita, I have a very small store, and I've been in business for close to 40 years now, so I've gotten the whole brunt of the bottle bill. And please excuse some of the terms and phrases I use, because it's surely out of frustration of working with the bottle bill over the last 34 years. The one phrase you'll never hear me say is, I love the bottle bill. When I made up a little speech, I didn't realize it'd be so repetitious, but there are some things in here that are going to be maybe a little stronger points, and maybe if I can have you bear with me, please. There are four major reasons why the bottle bill should not be expanded. First, it is horribly expensive. I rent a can machine for $400 a month. Add to this the labor to tend to the machine, plus sorting bottles, and my expenses are over 11,000 a year. Expand on the bottle bill and I will need a second machine. My expenses will double. Second, return containers take up valuable space. Presently, it takes 200 square feet of inside space. We don't have the spare, plus 100 square feet of outside space for full bags. Expand the bottle bill and double the space required. Third, to be in compliance of the bottle bill presents a real health hazard. It's something we've talked about at length. With a can machine, we have no control over dirty bottles. When the bottle bin is in the machine is full, it must be taken inside and sorted into empty boxes. At times, the stench is overwhelming. I had one of my employees take a turkey syringe and squirt up the liquid that
came into the machine. I was going to bring it today, and I was afraid I'd probably be hauled away in chains, so I didn't. It is just horrible, the smell. Fourth, the glass bin poses a threat to severe injury. Every full glass bin has several broken bottles that can inflict cuts on the person sorting bottles. These are reasons why we shouldn't expand the bill, and here comes one of those things I warned you against. In fact, these are reasons why we shouldn't have it in the first place. The bottle bill has been presented to the public as a means of keeping bottles and cans off the roadside, thus keeping the state litter-free. However, the containers in question make up a small percentage of the visible litter. Big Mac wrappers, Pepsi and Coke cups, disposable diapers, rubber tires, and the list goes on, are distastefully prevalent today. As a beautification bill, the bottle bill simply sucks. If it wasn't for volunteer labor and the Adopt-a-Highway program, the state would be knee-deep in trash. If your intent is to beautify our roadways, why not enforce the litter fines already in law? In actuality, the bottle bill has turned into a recycling bill. The state doesn't have the money to establish and maintain statewide recycling centers, so it has mandated this upon the grocery industry without any compensation. How can the state justify this? Is it because we sell these products? If that's the case, maybe Home Depot should be responsible for all sewers since they sell toilets. Thank you.
Jim, would you, for the record, give your name and full name?
Jim Girard from Mill City Marketplace, Mill City, Oregon.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you all very much. I had one question. That is, maybe, Bridget, if you could just follow the trail of the money. How does it get distributed as it starts in the retailer store, and where does it go?
I think that'd be better addressed to Joe Gillen. Okay. He actually has a chart. It's that'd not as cool. Easy as following the nickels.
Okay.
Shelby.
So if you don't mind, I'll send you
that. That'd be cool. Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Mr. Gillen. Did we have any others that had not been called? I think I've checked off every name so far.
Mr. Chair, not to scare you to death. How do you lid on this? This is a simile of what comes back in our bottles. Okay? There's nothing real in there that's actually come out of bottles and cans. It gives you an idea of what it looks like when it comes to our stores, some of the items and containers, objects that come into our machines.
And are we on camera?
Oh, yeah.
It does have a removable lid if you'd like to take a small smell, but it lies again.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jim Bernal. I'm the founder and president of Willamette Valley Vineyards, and I'm here to caution you against expanding the bottle bill for its economic problems and costs it will impose upon the grocery industry. One of the reasons why I thought I'd come up and speak to you is because there's an untold story here about our industry. Only 35 years ago, there was only two producing wineries in Oregon. Now there's 250. We have a payroll of well over 1,000. Where people don't realize this, but we actually sell now $220 million worth of wine a year. We rank sixth now among all agricultural products in Oregon, ahead of Christmas trees and just behind milk. It's amazing what has happened in growing this wonderful industry we have in Oregon. And I think people don't realize the rest of the story. Our single most important partners in growing our industry in Oregon has been the folks in this room, the Oregon grocers. We still today sell over 50% of our product within our state's boundaries. 75% of that is sold through Oregon grocers. They have been the economic engine for our industry. They have put on the floor and on their displays far more space for us than the turnover rates would really support. And so we're very concerned about adding additional products and costs for them to have to handle, including wine bottles. Now, I just wanted to make this one final comment. As a manufacturer, we would love to encourage people to return bottles to us. In fact, we encourage it. The problem is, under Oregon law, it's illegal for us to put it on the label. We would love to provide an economic incentive for people to return bottles to us. We've been doing it ever since Willamette Valley Vineyards has been in business. But strangely, it's called a coupon when you put it on a label, and it's illegal under Oregon law. That's something you can fix.
Thank you, Jim. Question?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Thank you. You've raised something that I was unaware of. In you're talking about this coupon. Is that part of the law that applies just to wine, or wine and beer, or
alcoholic beverages?
Alcoholic beverages, and that's something that the state of Oregon controls by statute.
Yes.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jim. And you mentioned that the bottles return to you. How could they do that?
Our customers do visit the wineries on special occasions. You'd be amazed at the pilgrimage they make to our wineries each year on Memorial Day weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, and other times of the year when they bring family and friends visiting from other states to proudly show their own industry. You'd be surprised. Our customers come back with all of their bottles that they've collected over that time. Now, obviously, we can only legally tell them to do this only by word of mouth, and we give them a 10-cent credit on every bottle they return to us. We in turn take those bottles, and those bottles are either recycled, in other words, crushed and used again, or actually washed and reused by a company called Saga. We provide all of those bottles to them at no cost to them, so they're incented to come and get them from us. And we let them do that in the bin, so they use our bins to recycle. So this has worked this way ever since I've been in business all these years. But I'd sure love to be able to tell my customers without violating the law.
Maybe another coupon. Mr. Gilliam.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, for the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the Oregon Grocery Association. What I did for you here, because you'd have a lot of questions on how the nickel works and following the nickel and the process. It's just not a very easy system. So I tried to put together a graphic illustration. It's pretty complex, so I hope I can explain this to you as you follow along. I had the staff handout. Do you have all this? Do you have the color sheet in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The top diagram really is an illustration of what the system is today. And if you go up to the far left-hand corner where it says start, you really start with the manufacturer, who then moves the bottles over to the product over to the distributor, who then moves them to the retailer. At that point, when the distributor goes to the retailer, the first nickel is exchanged. We pay a nickel to the distributor as that product comes through the door. For beer, that is paid on a cash basis, and for soft drinks, that's paid on terms, whatever the terms are. So some of it's paid right up front, some gets paid later. The retailer then has it on the shelf, and the consumer comes in and buys it. So the second nickel is exchanged. We're given the nickel for the product that we have, and we're made whole, and the consumer now is out the nickel. The consumer then takes that product, and this is where we run into a problem really with the bottle bill, that wasn't intentionally done this way. It wasn't thought out to somehow mess it up. But this is where the problems arise in the bottle bill, is that we take that U-turn, and we start coming back upstream, and we're bringing used products back to the fresh food supply. And this is where your product really ensues with the grocery industry. The product is consumed and brought back to the store. About 84% of those containers that were sold come back to the store, and they're along that lower level there. You also have a new component that's introduced here in the bright green. And that's really the fraudulent cans, the people who come over from Washington or bring them in from Idaho and redeem them because they never paid a nickel, and it's a free nickel. So those go into the stream also. Now, we can't very well tell which ones are Oregon cans or which ones are Washington cans. There's only one product out there that actually kicks out of the machine, and that's a Pepsi product. They have the ability to barcode it, but not all bottlers can do that. They're not located in the right spot. It doesn't make financial sense to do it. So it's a difficulty for us to get that done. So that 5 cents is lost to that fraudulent claim. Those go into the pot, and we give them to the distributor. We don't know which is which. And so the distributor has to pay us for the bad can, and then pay us for the cans, the good cans that we do have coming back into the system. The distributor then takes that product back through their system, through Crink or another company like that, and then it goes back into the recycling system, and they get the money for the scrap. So if you look under the distributor there at the bottom, really what they have financially to deal with is the loss due to the fraud coming over the borders. But they also get the interest or the float on the about $32 million or so on the beer deposits that are paid up front. So there is a float there that does accumulate. But it does not accumulate as much on the soft drinks. Then they also get to keep the unredeemed nickels. So if the 84% is accurate, which is what we've been told from DEQ and their numbers, there's $10.4 million in what they call a sheet in the system. And then additionally, they get the scrap value. So there's some winners and losers in that for them. The scrap value is going to go up and down based on, you know, what the value of the glass is worth. Right now is zero. Aluminum, you get money for. Plastic is a loser. So they have to take their costs out of handling that, too. Where do they store it? What do they do with it? And so that has to be taken out of that portion, too. The bottom graph really illustrates, if you really want to expand the bottle bill, the mechanics of what you need to do, and I'm not going to say it's an easy task, but the pieces that you have to consider and willing to chew on to expand it is, number one, you need to get the bottles and cans out of the stores. As you've heard today over and over, we can't take the volume of this refuse back upstream. You have to take that U-turn out and make it a straight line. So what you see really is starting there, manufacturer to distributor, distributor to retailer, but no deposits being exchanged at that point. This would allow the distributors to be out of the system and not be mandated to handle all the garbage coming back upstream. The retailer would take, and what's been discussed is going to 10 cents to update the bottle bill, so I put it in here. We'd take 10 cents from the customer, we'd give them the product, and then they would go further down the line. They would take the product to some type of redemption center, a redemption agent of some sort. And that person could be different for a rural community than it would be for a metropolitan community. You may want a redemption center with a drive-up window and machines, where in a rural area it may be a existing distributor who says, I want the business, and I'll pick it up, and I'll make contact points where I'll pick those recycling pieces up. Could be anything, could be very creative, but they would have to run that system. So that system then would be off-site from the grocery store. That in the orange there, that a private industry redemption agent would then have to go to the scrap and the recycling companies and get whatever value there is for the product. In order to do all this, there's a couple of big factors you have to consider. In the blue line below retailer, you'd follow. We'd send the deposits over to that redemption agent in order to be off-site. So they'd have to get the money, whereas before it went to the distributor, now we have someone else in that place. That redemption agent would also have to deal with the fraud issue. And that's not going to get any better, because when you go to a dime, people who pick up rubbish for a nickel and take the time to throw in a pickup truck and drive it over from Vancouver and do this whole thing are going to be willing to do it for a dime. If you increase the volume, it's even going to be more profitable. So there's going to be more people interested in doing it. So good, bad, or indifferent, it's just with the Washington without a bottle bill, you're just making it more valuable to take their recycling and bring it over the border. So in the pink, the bright pink, is the big question. So one, I don't know if anybody's really willing to address, but you can't get this done without it, and that's the X factor. Who will we tax to pay for the handling? Currently, it's on us. We have to fund all that money. You just heard about what it costs us to do that. Come in. So in order to expand it and do the straight line, you're going to have to say, who's going to pay? Is it going to be the manufacturer? Is it going to be the distributor? Is it going to be the retailer? Is it going to be the consumer? Is it a public issue? Should the general fund pay? 2 cents is going to get you about $26 million. So you've got to figure out what these cost. Now, California, as you've discussed California in trying to do that, I think some of the comments where Kay came in too low, they probably did, because they're trying to come back now. Theirs is a manufacturer handling fee based on what's actually redeemed. So if I sell so many pop cans, and there's 100,000 collected, California has to send me, or bills me for 100,000 collected. That's not keeping up with the pace. There's a kind of a belief out there that the sheet is so large, it would double under this plan, and double plus more of the volume, but how much is enough, or how much will actually be there? If redemption, if our goal is to meet higher recycling numbers, the sheet's going to go down. So if you're trying to go from 84% to 94%, you're going to have less unredeemed, so there's going to be less money in that system, but more containers handled, so expenses will get higher. So relying on these sheets is not necessarily a guaranteed answer. To rely on a sheet, you have to hope for less recycling, so the sheet gets larger, and you get a larger cut of the financial pie. So I bring this to you strictly not as a proposal, but as the mechanics. These are the reality of following the nickel and a deposit and kind of the challenges you have to go through expansion. I'm not saying you should or should not do that. The bottle bill in its present form gives us many challenges in terms of sanitation. We'd like to see it out of the stores. I'd like to see you go to the bottom proposal. But I'm being very realistic when I tell you these are the real challenges. I'm not sugarcoating it, and these are what's before you. Any questions, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Barnard.
Thank you. We've heard today from a number of people who would like to get the recycling out of their stores. I wasn't involved in the original conversations back in the 70s about why they're in the stores, but I suspect one of the reasons is because we wanted to make sure that as many bottles as possible, bottles and cans as possible, actually got recycled. And the stores were a convenient way of doing that. That's a preface to my question. The question really is, do you know what the effects are of using out-of-store private industry redemption agents, as you've labeled them here, some reasonable distance away from where the people who buy these products are, is on the redemption rate, and also on the costs of providing the service as compared to having it broken up as it is now among many, many different retailers. Could you comment on those two things?
Chair Anderson, Representative Barnhart, since we really haven't had the experience of doing that, there's some folks out there saying, if we could consolidate these costs, so instead of having 10 stores that have 10 separate redemption areas at their stores, and you had one redemption center in that area, you could consolidate costs and find some efficiencies that way. I mean, that's a theory in how you do it. How does the consumer react to that? We're really not sure. It seems to be working in California in terms of their recycling rates. Where they're running into problem is the cost paying for getting adequate amount of dollars to pay the cost of running the centers. It's not the popularity of the centers. Those centers seem to be, actually, people seem to be going there and bringing their recyclables and putting them in.
Okay. Follow up on that. Is it the position of your organization and its members that we should go to something like this lower line here? Is that the view of OGA?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, if you are to expand the bottle bill, we believe you should go to the lower line because we can't take any more volume back in through the store and manage the sanitation issues that go bringing garbage back upstream. We firmly believe, and our position is, you need to separate your fresh food distribution from your recycling.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you comment on the California? You mentioned that you thought it was working pretty well down in California. I've heard comments that it's not working at all.
Chair Anderson, I was talking to a representative from Grocery Manufacturers of America just last week about this, and their comment was the public seemed to be accepting it, but the cost issue is what the big challenge was, is that there just wasn't enough money built in the system to pay for the actual handling and keeping the centers open, and that was the information I received.
So the state is funding it?
The state is involved in it, yes. The state runs the redemption centers. And it's paid for through, they have the sheet, plus they get the manufacturer handling fee based on what is sold, what is redeemed, not what is sold.
Where does the money come from for the 2.5 cents? Is that paid at purchase?
It is not. It's paid by the manufacturer after it's redeemed. So if you're the redemption center and you collect 100 of my containers, you charge me for 100 containers, and then I have to pay that to the redemption center. They are not charged for the products that are not redeemed, as I understand it.
If a state were to go to a California type of operation, what would be a reasonable
bottle fee. I believe it's, Representative Lim was bringing that up. What would be a fair price for all, including the plastic water bottles and juice bottles, aluminum cans, glass bottles, whatever?
Mr. Chair, that's going to be a tough one to try to say per unit, largely because I believe if it's privately run, you're going to have some lower costs associated with those centers. But it's tough to say what is the pay scale, what is the benefit scale, what is the cost of the land underneath it. It's going to vary from the cost of doing one in Grants Pass as it is doing one in downtown Portland. So trying to nail cost right now, I couldn't exactly tell you. Our costs vary anywhere from 1 to 3 cents. It's been estimated what it costs us per container to handle these, process them through. I don't think that would be any different. Excuse my voice, Mr. Chair. It would be any different for someone doing a independent, unless they can find some efficiencies that we don't see in our businesses. But you still have to have labor there. Someone has to handle it. Someone has to move it. You know, you do solve the sanitation issue, which would be a huge goal if you've met that one. We separated the recycling from the food distribution, but you're still going to have the costs associated with handling it, moving it.
Okay. Yes. Joe, this is very informational, and I'm learning a lot. But why the industry as a whole come together or propose some good legislation instead of talking about this is unsanitary, the space is the problem, the cost too much, and then, you know, whole things. Instead of talking about it, why couldn't come up industry together to give us some directions and answers on this matter? You know, this has been 34 years, and I think it's about time to write give some answer. At the same time, the California style, the redemption center might not work in here because the people, it's grocery stores is close by, it's easier to bring it in, and when we're trying to locate certain centers, it might be far from the places, you know, for the nickels, you know, they might not bring it, it might not work well. And so instead of giving my mind clear, you made me more confused.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, it is a confusing process, and it is a Rubik's Cube. We didn't ask for or create the bottle bill to be brought upon us, and a lot of the thought that went into the bottle bill, they just didn't address the tail end of the issue. The whole idea wasn't really recycling, it was litter pickup. It was the trash being left on the beach and giving an incentive for people to take the trash back and get it off the beaches, out of the parks. Don't litter, don't throw it out your car. If it's worth a nickel, don't throw it out the window. That was really the impetus behind getting the bottle bill going. It wasn't a recycling measure per se. It's become one because it gets gathered and recycled. In terms of giving you answers, it's because of the way the system's set up, and there's so many issues around the money and how do you pay for getting it done. That becomes a challenge. I mean, you have an example right there in front of you how you can do it. Now the question is who are you going to put the cost on? I mean, that's your decision as a policymaker. You get to decide who you're going to put the cost on in order to do this. You have an answer in front of you. If I could do it curbside, and it were curbside, and people would get their nickel back from dropping it in the curbside, we'd have 85% of the problem solved. People would love to do that, but how do you get your nickel back when you drop a curbside? Who's going to keep track of that? If you can figure that one out, well, I'll work with you on that one, because the consumer would love it. The consumer, there's going to be a certain amount of resistance from the consumer when you start adding things to the bottle bill, and the more and more things have to go back in the trunk to get into the store, you're just not going to see some people say, look, it's too much to take back, you know, and you're going to see either going to still go curbside, they're going to lose the nickel or the dime or whatever you decide it would be. So I would like to give you an easy answer, Representative Lim. The answer's in front of you, and it's a tough one.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. One of the unfair things in this bottle bill industry is no compensation at all. You know, that the retailers are handling all of those things, the burdens on them, but there's absolutely no compensation. I don't think this is fair. And somehow when I was a senator, I tried to pass the bill at least 1 cent, give it to the retailer, even though it's a small amount. 1 cent is almost 20%. And so I think that we have to find out some answer. I don't think it is a good idea just to keep on as it is. It is unsanitary, it is not economical, it is not good for long-term environmental issues. Sooner or later, we need to find out. I hope we all industry legislators get together that they find a very important issue. As you know, in our state, three characteristics in our state. One is the water bill compared to any other state. We have no sales tax. We have a public beach. These three things are very outstanding in our state. I don't believe we cannot take this bottle bill away. We need to make it better somehow. That's my just like a 5 cents comment.
Mm-hmm. Went up from 2 cents, didn't it? Two questions, and I want to move on. What percentage of the you sell a number of containers? How many are coming back? What percentage are we losing out there?
What we're told is 84% are coming back, so you're losing 16%. Okay. Now, there's some disagreement on whether that includes the cans from outside of the state or not. And I'll let the recyclers and others maybe argue that point out because I didn't count them myself. But the estimation that I've been told is 84% redemption rate is what you have.
Okay. Unless there's other questions, I think we'll call it at that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Romaine, could we have you come forward?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. I want to give you a little picture of why the bottle bill works, which is actually a picture of why we hate it, but it's also a picture of why you're probably not going to do a heck of a lot with it. And I've been doing this for a long time here, so if I skip over things, it's only because I thought I said it already, but I probably said it 4 years ago, so I apologize. The bottle bill is extremely popular in this state for a couple of reasons. One is it's very, very convenient. You've taken all the groceries and made them into redemption centers, and you've heard the problems, but that's one of the reasons it works, is it's on every corner there's a redemption center. It's a burden they have. It's a terrible burden because you're bringing crap back to the store, but it's one of the reasons it works. Second reason it works, people don't think it costs them anything. They think it's free, and everybody loves free programs. And the reason it's free, in their mind, is because when it was first passed, back in the early 70s, the distributors and the grocers raised their prices to cover their costs. We're not idiots. We have costs. You raise your price to cover the cost. Now, it's not out there as a separate fee, but we've covered all of our costs in this situation at all levels. Those are really the main reasons why I like to talk about almost the religion of the bottle bill. Because, frankly, if you do polls in this state, you probably find more support for the bottle bill than you do for organized religion. It's truly has become a thing. I remember when my daughter, we have bottle bill fights all the time. In the old days, it was over wine coolers. None of you are old enough to remember this, but we had,
thank you,
at least legislatively old enough to remember, where we had Donnybrooks over whether wine coolers would be part of the bottle bill because they're not a malt beverage and they're not a carbonated soft drink. And we would go back and forth over whether these things should be in there. And this whole issue has been around for so long. Let me tell you one of the reasons that the wine coolers never were brought in. And it's the other thing that makes the bottle bill work, which people don't understand. everything that's in a bottle bill right now is distributed in exclusive territories. In other words, within a given area, there's one distributor of that product. And what that means is the same distributor that's selling the product at Costco is also selling and going to the Safeway and the mom and pop and everybody else in a given territory. So the odds of the bottle getting back to the nickel are fairly good. That was the old system behind the original, you know, 2 cent deposit stuff that, I guess we all grew up with. Sorry. Don't see any real young ones up there right now, so I can say that.
Young at heart.
Young at heart. But we all grew up with the 2 cent, you know, Coke and Pepsi deposit stuff. It's all based on territories, basically. It's one of the things that grocers hate territories because, frankly, they only have one person to buy from in a given thing. If they want the Coke, they buy it from the Coke distributor. If they want the Budweiser, they buy it from the Budweiser distributor. There's interbrand competition, but there's only one person. But that's what makes the bottle bill work. Most of the products you're talking about putting back, or at least have been talked about coming into the bottle bill, are not distributed in exclusive territories. There's basically one, maybe the manufacturer sends it to a central warehouse for the grocer. Or there's another distributor that goes to the small mom and pops. And you heard from the grocers, very true, some of the buying habits. I'm as guilty as anybody else. You go to Costco and you buy huge amounts of whatever it might be. But you never take the stuff back to Costco because they've got one machine there and it's not part of your buying habits. You go to Safeway or Freddy's or one of your local Thriftway or whatever it happens to be, and they are the ones who have the real burden on the bottle bill vis-a-vis some of the other grocers out there, like the big warehouse stores. That's where the major inequity is. Frankly, the cost to a Safeway or Freddy's or a Thriftway or some of those folks versus a Costco and the bottle bill, that's where you have the inequity. Now, there has been a little talk about unredeemed deposits. And I always like to say that I must be representing the dumbest people on earth, because if we were making the amount of money that we're supposedly making from machines or from the unredeemed, then why would we possibly fight expansion of bottle bills here, fight the introduction of bottle bills in every single state? We hate the bottle bill. You can take it away. You can take us out of it anytime you want. The problem is we're facing is there's a huge amount of cross-border traffic, and that accounts for the high redemption rate. We believe DEQ is probably right. There's a lot of folks who do different estimates. The 84% is, I think, a little low. I've heard low 90% for redemption rates. But when we actually do a count, a physical count of that which comes through the machines and that which doesn't, which we actually hand count at Container Recovery, consistently it's been 98%+ redemption. Now, that's physically impossible if we had a wall around the state. It's physically impossible for us to have that with the amount that's thrown away, the amount that's broken, all that other stuff. But because of the cross-border, you get a huge amount of extra stuff coming in. It's the main reason why we oppose any increase in a deposit. Right now, an empty case of beer is worth $1.20 in this state. There's more money in an empty case sometimes than in a full case. If you increase it to $2.40, it's a huge amount. In fact, it's so crazy, Seinfeld did an episode that's entitled The Bottle Bill, or The Bottle Deposit. And it was, if you recall, it was Newman and who's the Kramer, the nutcases, Newman the mailman's theory was you take empty mail trucks, you take the New York 5 cent deposit ones that also say Michigan 10 cents, and you truck them to Michigan. And everybody laughed at that episode, except for the grocers and the distributors, because we knew it was true. That's what happens. You get, it's an economic incentive. You take in trash, which has a limited value for recycling purposes, and you put it in an unofficial or artificial value on that trash. The problem you have right now, your bottle bill right now, our bottle bill, works. I remember, I think it was third or fourth grade, one of my daughters, not the one who's here, the other one, I'm on TV opposing the wine cooler bottle bill, you know, and my daughter looked at me with these eyes huge and just goes, "Daddy, you're not opposed to the bottle bill, are you?" was like, Daddy, you're not beating Mommy, are you? It was like, you know, I was doing something sacrilegious because I didn't want wine coolers coming into the bottle bill. It works right now because it's very simple and people don't think it costs them anything. Yes, there are huge amounts of problems with it. And if you think you have problems now, wait till you try to expand it to waters and to natural fruit juices and things like that that have multiple distribution systems. You would have a Donnybrook of a fight, first of all, down here over making those exclusive, because that's really the only way. Otherwise, you've got the person, you definitely want to be the one who delivers to the Costco, because you're going to collect a whole bunch of deposits and you're not going to get anything back. You're not going to have to give out anything. And you're definitely not going to be the one who has to deliver to the Safeways, Freddy's, and those folks with their 130, 140% redemption rate. Pepsi did an interesting study. They actually are the only ones who changed the barcode for purposes of finding out what the redemption rate. And in Janssen Beach, 40% of the cans were from Washington State. That's a lot of cans coming across. Now, that was just Pepsi, and it was just Janssen Beach, but it's illustrative. I have distributors in Astoria, in Brookings, in Medford, in Nyssa, Ontario, who are getting absolutely hammered, and they get the difference is anything over 100% comes out of their pocket, absolutely out of their pocket. I frankly don't understand how, and it must deal with private label products, how a grocer could ever be out of pocket for the deposit. But because the distributor is under, by law, supposed to redeem and give them a nickel for every container they bring back. So it has to. It might have something to do with private label product, which doesn't go through distributors and is usually handled by one store versus another store. But I was trying to figure that out in the back of the room. But distributors who over-redeem are just out. And, I mean, what I'm trying to say, and I'm not sure I'm being very articulate at doing this because it's getting late and I've been sitting here and I've been saying this for 25 years, is it's not perfect. It has a lot of flaws. We set up container recovery back in the mid-80s, I think 87 or 89. I was actually the one who came up with the idea for container recovery and put it together. And the reason we did it was because of another flaw in the bottle bill, which was containers in a grocer's back room. There'd be a fight every time you went in with your full product over how much was actually in a container or a bag. Was it full? Was it not full? Were there four bags there? Were there three bags there? So the whole reason for container recovery, the original reason for container recovery, was to separate the delivery of the full product from the collection of the empty product. That was the reason for putting it together. We think it's worked pretty well. We've tried to cut our costs. We've tried to make it work. But I'll tell you a couple of things. One is, if you do change the bottle bill, please take us out, and we want an ironclad guarantee that at least as long as I am working for them, there is no attempt to bring us back in. We don't want to come back in. Once you take us out, we are out. We want a hall pass that says we can stay out for the entire time of the class. We will work with you on any kind of system. But again, let me emphasize, it's the simplicity of the system, the fact that it's limited, and the fact that there's not one iota of government involvement in this. Think about that for a second. This is probably the most successful environmental program in the entire state, and there's not one bit of government in this program. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Carhart.
Us being the distributors.
Pardon?
You said us, getting us out of it. Us being the distributors?
Right.
Okay. Next follow-up, if I may.
Us for get us out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not. I'm the consumer I'm going to be in, but no.
But when you said us, you meant the distributors, the people you're working for.
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen this chart?
I saw the chart, and frankly, I didn't read the chart. But.
Okay. All right. Well, at some point, I'd like your comment on the bottom line of the chart, because it appears to take the distributors out and leaves the retailers in.
Again, I haven't seen any of the particulars of a proposal, but again, we're willing to look at anything that truly does take us out, and not taking us out in the California fashion. What California does, there's no deposit in California. It just says California redemption value. If you look on top of your can or whatever, it says California redemption value. What that means is you can take it to a redemption center in California and get money for it, depending on what the market is, depending. But what they do is they to pay for the administration of the system by the state and for the actual redemption centers and for the amount to pay the consumer, they charge the wholesaler and the manufacturer. It's far more expensive than our bottle bill. At least the manufacturers and distributors who got together to join this system to thwart efforts to put in a California bottle bill are unanimous in thinking that they've done horrible things to themselves. So. Okay. Thank you.
Is there a point at which I've already taken a pledge against new taxes, but is there a point at which the cost per bottle should go up? You said that the retailers would like to get it out of the stores. Maybe they need money to build other sheds to keep it out of the store, or maybe there's other incentives to the retailers to cover their costs. Should we go to a dime at some point in the future? Inflation has certainly made it such that nickel isn't reasonable anymore.
From a distributor standpoint, you'll probably have to ask the manufacturers on that particular issue. My guess is that any increase in that would be probably posed by most manufacturers of products. But one of the things currently under the current bottle bill, you can set up redemption centers. You know, they're allowed for under the current bottle bill. You have to, once you set it up, and then you don't have to take back product. If there is a redemption center that's convenient, basically you don't have to take back. Nobody's ever set up one of those. So, but it is provided for in current law. As far as the cost, again, I come back to the two things that people think that the bottle redemption is free and it's very, very convenient. And that's what makes it work. So, yeah, we can talk about different things like that, but again, if you increase the amount or if you charge them 10 cents and give them back 5 cents and keep the 5 cents for a redemption center, all of a sudden you have consumers out there saying, wait a second, you're charging me for this thing now. It never cost me anything before. They don't understand that we raised our price and the grocer raised their price.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I'll close the informational part of the meeting, and we'll move to a hearing on two possible bills. First of all,
want me to explain it?
Yes, if you will.
Mr. Chair, your committee staff has been approached by two members of the lobby seeking to have the committee consider two proposals for possible introduction as committee legislation. I sent copies of those proposals to each of you last week. The first of the two proposals is LC Draft 1148. Essentially, the summary basically defines what the bill does. It requires the DEQ to appoint a solid waste advisory committee for the purpose of reviewing statewide material recovery goals and making recommendations. I would call your attention to the last sentence of the proposed draft in that it provides that the director shall determine the representation, membership, terms, and organizations of the committee. So at least as introduced, the legislation would not particularly extensively define what the nature of the committee would be that would perform this work. I would also call your attention to the previous sentence beginning on line 12 of the draft, which notes that the committee shall consider the total cost of reaching percentage rates or goals when performing its work.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Dewey, would you come and present to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Mike Dewey, representing Waste Management, the business Waste Management Corporation. And I'm here as a messenger primarily, and I'm not here to give you the whole spiel. I mean, I'm asking that you introduce this bill and at a later date consider the rationale for passing this bill. I was going to say that we'll see if we can bring Mr. Romaine into this bill also as a distributor, just as an aside, just having some fun here. Basically, waste management, first of all, is the largest recycler in the world. So this is not an anti-recycling bill by any means. We have been having, as a partner with the Metropolitan Service District, Metro, a number of discussions about where we're going on recycling material recovery in this state. And this state does a wonderful job. If you were to take any other state and just basically say, compare us to that state, I will venture that we are much better in terms of our ethic and program. At the same time as we struggle to meet artificial deadlines, artificial numbers in certain regions, we've said to ourselves, is there a better way to do it? Is there a better way to count how we recycle? We do it now on a percentage basis. We do it on credits. We've got a numerator and a denominator, and then we take credits for recycling, yard debris, and others in particular regions. And one of the Metro commissioners said, well, what is it going to cost us to get to the last 2% of our goal? And what if it's going to be more than what that cost is more than the total cost of getting to that 2%. In other words, you consume more energy. And what other states are doing it, and how are we counting it? And so we wanted to keep this fairly wide open and look for the expertise within DEQ and the recycling community, not to name names as to who should be on this. DEQ would choose that. They haven't weighed in on this bill, and I haven't asked them to at this point in time because the bill hadn't been introduced. So we think it's a discussion worth having. I know we had a meeting with Metro today, a couple of the commissioners, and they are interested in at least having this discussion. So I would hope that we could move forward. I know you'll have busy schedules, and I will work to have this conversation with you at another time. I wasn't prepared necessarily to give you the whole spiel because there's a lot more to be said about this. But as a company that has an ethic in recycling, it's not against recycling, it's are there better ways to do it? So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Do I hear any objection to introducing this as a committee bill?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
So the record clarifies, may I suggest that you close the hearing and open a work session if you can.
Okay. I'll close the hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd move that the, I guess it's LC 1148 is the one that we're looking at here, be introduced as a committee bill.
Okay. Representative Jensen moves that LC 1148 be accepted as a committee bill. Do I hear any objection? Hearing none, we will accept that. All right. Let's now open a work session on LC 967. Like to give us a brief overview.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was approached by Mr. Dave Barrows representing Chemical Waste Management. Chemical Waste Management operates a facility near Arlington, Oregon that accepts hazardous and other types of waste that you would not normally place in a general landfill setting. As part of their cost of doing business, they collect and pay a fee, a per-ton based fee on the certain types of material they accept. They collect the fee and then they pay the fee to the DEQ. The existing statute has in it an actual fee that they are obligated to collect. However, historically, over the last probably 8 to 9 years,
the legislature has seen fit to adopt legislation that has replaced that set fee with a series of fees that are based on the amount and type of material that are accepted at their or any other facility of their type in Oregon. The purpose of the proposed legislation would be to make those current substitute fees, if you will, permanent in statute, and also to, more importantly, delete a sunset provision that exists in the current law that would apply to those temporary fees. That sunset date is January 2nd, 2006.
All right. Sparrows, would you like to come in at all?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Barrels, Chemical Waste Management, which is a subsidiary of Mr. Dewey's company, Waste Management. We've run that facility out there for a number of years, starting in 1985, this legislature began to put $10 a ton fee on, and we're just the tax collectors. I mean, it doesn't matter to us, except that we have to stay competitive with our competitors in Idaho and Utah. $10, $20, $30. Then we began to tinker with them because Idaho started playing with their fees, so we adjusted our fees to keep us competitive. We did it always with the full and complete support of the DEQ. And for those of you who have been on this committee before, we have walked up holding hands together each session and said, we agree with these fee changes for different kinds of waste streams. All this bill does, as Mr. Hauser very accurately indicated to you, is make those fees that we have agreed to over the years permanent and removes the sunset. Because what would happen is if we somehow, something happened and the bill didn't pass in a session, the fees would automatically go to $30, our facility would be totally uncompetitive, and we would have to shut it down. And it sounds a little dramatic, but the DEQ, if they were sitting here, would say that's exactly what would happen. The DEQ has seen this bill, they support this bill, and that's probably about the length of the testimony that we'll give when we come before you on substantive day. So we would hope you would put the bill in. This committee has always introduced this hazardous waste disposal fee bill, and we would hope you'd do it again this year. And it makes, at this point, makes no changes in any of the fees, and that would occur only if Idaho made any changes, and we don't think that's going to occur in their session.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Jeff.
I move LC 967 be introduced as a committee bill.
All right. Any discussion? Any questions? Hearing none, we will enter it as a committee bill. And I'll close the work session, and we will adjourn.